He was becoming very tired. But along with the weariness, he felt spasms of pure joy. Spear formed the company. Rice took over the prisoners. Rice came by to watch them go. "Connell," Chamberlain said. "One thing. What's the name of this place? This hill? Has it got a name?"
"Little Round Top," Rice said. "Name of the hill you defended.
The one you're going to is Big Round Top."
"Little Round Top. Battle of Little Round Top. Well, I guess we'll remember it."
"Move 'em out, Ellis." He went back to say goodbye to Kilrain. The white head was visible from a long way off, sitting stump-like, motionless in the dark of the trees. He had leaned back and was staring at the sky, his eyes closed. He had welcomed Chamberlain to the regiment, and there had never been a day without him. He would be going back to the hospital now, and Chamberlain did not know what to say, did not know how to express it. Blue eyes opened in a weary face. Kilrain smiled.
"I'll be going, Buster," Chamberlain said.
Kilrain grumbled, looked sourly, accusingly at his bloody wound.
"Damn.
Well, you take care. I'll send Tom back with word."
"Sure."
"We'll miss you. Probably get into all kinds of trouble without you."
"No,"
Kilrain said.
"You'll do all right."
"Well, I have to go."
"Right. Goodbye, Colonel."
He put out a hand formally. Chamberlain took it. "It was a hell of a day, wasn't it, Buster?" Kilrain grinned. His eyes glistened. "I'll come down and see you tomorrow." Chamberlain backed off.
"Sure."
Kilrain was blinking, trying to keep his eyes open. Chamberlain walked away, stopped, looked back, saw the eyes already closed, turned his back for the last time, moved off into the gathering dark. He moved forward and began to climb the big hill in the dark. As he walked, he forgot his pain. His heart began to beat quickly, and he felt an incredible joy. He looked at himself, wonderingly, at the beloved men around him, and he said to himself, "Lawrence, old son, treasure this moment, because you feel as good as a man can feel." 5. Longstreet. The hospital was an open field just back of the line. There were small, white tents all over the field, and bigger tents where the surgeons did the cutting. Hood was there, in a big tent, on a litter. Longstreet came in out of the dark, bowing under a canopy, saw the face like cold marble in yellow candlelight, eyes black and soft like old polished stones. Cullen and Maury were working together on the arm. Longstreet saw. Not much left of the hand. Exposed bone. He thought of Jackson hitting the arm at Chancellorsville. Died a slow death. "Let us cross over the river." Hood's black eyes stared unseeing. Longstreet said softly, "Sam." Cullen looked up. Maury was tying a knot, went on working. Troops had gathered outside the canopy. A sergeant bawled, "Move on, move on!" Hood stared at Longstreet, not seeing. There was dirt streaked and tear stains on his cheeks, but he was not crying now. His head twitched, cheek jerked. He said suddenly, in a light, strange, feathery voice,
"Should have let me move to the right,"
he breathed.
"To the right!"
Longstreet nodded. To Cullen, he said, "Can I talk to him?"
"Rather not. We've drugged him, sir. Better let him sleep."
Hood raised the other arm, twitched fingers,
let the hand fall.
Didn't see much. Boys went in and hit the rocks. I got hit.
Longstreet, no good at talking, nodded.
Should have moved right, Pete.
Hood was staring at him, bright, drugged, eerie eyes.
How did it go, Pete?
Fine, Sam.
We took those rocks?
Most of them.
Took the rocks. Really did.
Yes, Longstreet lied.
Hood's eyes blinked slowly, blearily. He put the good hand up to shade his eyes.
Devil's Den. Good name for it.
Yep.
Worst ground I ever saw. You know that?
Hood laid the back of his hand across his eyes. His voice trembled.
Got to give my boys credit.
Longstreet said to Cullen,
Can you save the arm?
We're trying, but if we do, it won't be much use to him.
Hood said,
Casualties? Was casualties?
Don't know yet, Longstreet said.
And then, not bad. Another lie. Cullen said gloomily, plaintively,
He ought to go to sleep.
Now don't fight it, General. Let it work. You just drift right on off.
Longstreet said softly, You go to sleep now, Sam. Tell you all about it tomorrow.
Shame not to see it.
Hood took the hand away. His eyes were dreaming, closing like small doors over a dim light.
Should have gone to the right.
He looked hazily at the hand.
You fellas try to save that now, you hear?
Yes, sir, General.
Now why don't you... Sure will miss it.
Hood's eyes closed again. His face began smoothing toward sleep. Longstreet thought,
He won't die. Not like Jackson.
There was a blackness around Jackson's eyes. Longstreet reached down, touched Hood on the shoulder, then turned and went out into the moonlight. Sorrell was there, with the silent staff. Longstreet mounted, rising up into the moonlight, looking out across the pale tents at the small fires, the black silence. He heard a boy crying, pitiful childish sobs, a deeper voice beyond, soothing. Longstreet shook his head to clear the sound, closed his eyes, saw Barksdale go streaming to his death against a flaming fence in the brilliant afternoon, hair blazing out behind him like white fire. Longstreet rode up the ridge toward the darker ground under the trees. Barksdale lies under a sheet. They have not covered his face. There is a flag over him. Sam's is dead. How many others? Longstreet cleared the brain, blew away bloody images, the brilliant fence and the bright gleaming air of the afternoon, tried to catalog the dead.
Must have figures.
But he was not thinking clearly. There was a rage in his brain, a bloody, cloudy area like mud stirred in a pool. He was like a fighter who has been down once and is up again, hurt and in rage, looking to return the blow, looking for the opening. But it was a silent rage, a crafty rage. He was learning war. He rode purposefully, slowly off into the dark, feeling the swelling inside his chest like an unexploded bomb, and in the back of his mind a vision of that gray, rocky hill. Little Round Top, all spiked with guns, massed with blue troops at the top, and he knew as certainly as he had ever known anything as a soldier that the hill could not be taken. Not anymore. And a cold, metal, emotionless voice told him that. Coldly, calmly,
speaking into his ear, as if he had a companion with him, utterly untouched by the rage, the war. A machine inside, wholly unhurt, a metal mind that did not feel at all.
"Sir?" Longstreet swiveled in the saddle.
"Sorrel,"
the man said warily. "Captain Gorry is here, sir. You sent for him?"
Longstreet looked, saw the skinny Texan, gestured. Sorrel backed off. Longstreet said,
"TJ, want you to get out to the right and scout the position. No more damn fool countermarches in the morning. Take most of the night, but get it clear. Get it clear. I've got Hood's division posted on our right flank. Or what's left of it. I put Law in command. You need any help, you get it from Law. All right?"
The Texan, a silent man, nodded, but did not move. Longstreet said,
"What's the matter?"
"They're blaming us," Gorry said.
His voice was squeaky, like a dry wagon wheel. He radiated anger. Longstreet stared.
"What?"
"I've been talking to Hood's officers. Do you know they blame us? They blame you. For today."
Longstreet could not see the bony face clearly in the dark, but the voice was tight and very high, and Longstreet thought,
"He could be a dangerous man. Out of control."
Gorry said,
"You may hear of it, General. I had to hit this fella. They all said the attack was your fault, and if General Lee knowed, he wouldn't have ordered it. And I just couldn't stand there, and I couldn't say right out what I felt, so I had to hit this one fella. Pretty hard. Had to do it. Ain't going to apologize neither. No time. But thought you ought to know."
"Is he dead?"
"I don't think so."
"Well, that's good."
Longstreet meditated.
"Well, don't worry on it. Probably won't hear another thing if you didn't kill him. Probably forgotten in the morning. One thing. I want no duels. No silly damn duels."
"Yes, sir. Thing is, if anything bad happens now, they all blame it on you. I've seen it coming. They can't blame General Lee. Not no more. So they all take it out on you. You gotta watch yourself, General."
"Well," Longstreet said, "let it go."
"Yes, sir, but it ain't easy. After I saw you take all morning trying to get General Lee to move to the right."
"Let it go, TJ. We'll talk on it after the fight."
Gorry moved out. There goes a damn good man. Longstreet felt the warmth of unexpected gratitude. He swung the black horse toward Lee's headquarters back on the road to Cashtown.
"Time to talk now. Good long talk. Watch the anger. Careful. But it is true. The men shied from blaming Lee. The old man is becoming untouchable. Now more than anything else, he needs the truth. Well, it's not his fault, not the old man."
Longstreet jerked the horse, almost ran into Sorrel. They came out into a patch of bright moonlight. Longstreet saw.
The man was hurt.
"Major,"
Longstreet said harshly,
"how are you?"
"Sir? Oh, I'm fine, sir. Just minor problem."
"That's a god-awful piece of horse you've got there."
"Yes, sir. Lost the other one, sir. It shot it out from under me. It lost both legs. I was with Deering's battery. Hot time, sir."
Sorrel bobbed his head apologetically. Longstreet pointed.
"What's the trouble with the arm?"
Sorrel shrugged, embarrassed.
"Nothing much, sir. Bit painful. Can't move it. Shrapnel, sir. Hardly broke the skin.
Ah, Osmond Latrobe got hit, too.
How bad?
Just got knocked off the horse, I believe. This fighting is very hard on the horses, sir. I was hoping we could get a new supply up here, but these Yankee horses are just farm stock, too big, too slow. Man would look ridiculous on a plow horse.
Well, Longstreet grumbled vaguely, take care of yourself, Major. You ain't the most likable man I ever met, but you sure are useful.
Sorrel bowed. I appreciate your sentiment, sir. The general is a man of truth.
Have you got the casualty figures yet?
No, sir. I regret to say, just preliminary reports, indications are that losses will exceed 1/3.
Longstreet jerked his head, acknowledging.
Sorrel said carefully, possibly more. The figures could go.
Don't play it down, Longstreet said.
No, sir. I think the casualties were much worse in Hood's division. Won't have an exact count for some time, but it appears that the Yankees put up a fight. My guess is Hood's losses will approach 50%.
Longstreet took a deep breath, turned away.
8,000 men? Down in 2 hours?
His mind flicked on.
Not enough left now for a major assault. No way in the world. Lee will see. Now, the facts. I need a hard count, Major. As quickly as possible.
Yes, sir, but, well, it's not easy. The men tend to suppress the truth. I hear, for example, that Harry Heath's division was badly hurt yesterday, but his officers did not report all the losses to General Lee because they did not want General Heath to get into trouble.
I want the truth, however black, but hard facts, soon as you can. I rely on you. Also, I want an account of artillery available, rounds remaining, type of rounds, etc. Got that? Get a note out to Alexander.
Up the road at a gallop, a handsome horseman, waving a plumed hat in the night. He reined up grandly, waved the hat in one long, slow swoop, bowed halfway down off the horse, a bored, sweeping cavalier's gesture.
Fairfax.
Another of Longstreet's aides.
General Pickett's compliments, sir. He wishes to announce his presence upon the field.
Longstreet stared, grunted, gave an involuntary chuckle.
Oh, grand, Longstreet said. That's just grand.
He turned to Sorrel.
Isn't that grand, Major? Now let the battle commence.
He grimaced. Grunted.
Tell General Pickett, I'm glad to have him here. At last.
Fairfax had a wide mouth. Teeth gleamed in moonlight.
General Pickett is gravely concerned, sir. He wishes to inquire if there are any Yankees left. He says to tell you that he personally is bored, and his men are very lonely.
Longstreet shook his head.
Fairfax went on cheerily. General Pickett reported earlier today to General Lee, while General Longstreet was engaged in the entertainment on the right flank. But General Lee said that General Pickett's men would not be necessary in the day's action. General Pickett instructs me to inform you that his is a sensitive nature, and that his feelings are wounded, and that he and his division of pale Virginians awaits you in yon field, hoping you will come tuck them in for the night and console them.
Well, Longstreet mused. Fairfax, are you drunk?
No, sir. I am quoting General Pickett's exact words, sir. With fine accuracy, sir.
Well,
Longstreet smiled once slightly, shrugged.
You can tell General Pickett I'll be along directly.
Fairfax saluted, bowed, departed. Longstreet rode on into the dark.
Pickett's division. 5,000 fresh men. Damn fine men. It was like being handed a bright new shiny gun. He felt stronger. Now talk to Lee.
He spurred the horse and began to canter toward the lights on the Cashtown Road. Headquarters could be seen from a long way off, like a small city at night. The glow of it rose above the trees and shone reflected in the haze of the sky. He could begin to hear singing. Different bands sang different songs, a melody of wind. He began to pass clusters of men laughing off in the dark. They did not recognize him. He smelled whiskey, tobacco, roasting meat. He came out into the open just below the seminary, and he could see headquarters field filled with smoke and light, hundreds of men, dozens of fires. He passed a circle of men watching a tall, thin black boy dressed in a flowing red dress, dancing, kicking heels. There was a sutler's store, a white wagon, a man selling a strange elixir with the high blessed chant of a preacher. He began to see civilians, important people in very good clothes, some sleek carriages, many slaves. People come up from home to see how the army was doing, to deliver a package to a son, a brother. He rode out into the light and heads began to turn and fix on him, and he felt the awkward flush come over his face. His eyes looked at him and knew him, and fingers began to point. He rode, looking straight ahead, a crowd beginning to trail out after him like the tail of a comet. A reporter yelled a question. One of the foreigners, the one with the silver helmet like an ornate chamber pot, waved an intoxicated greeting. Longstreet rode on toward the little house across the road. Music and laughter and motion everywhere. A celebration. All the faces were happy. Teeth glittered through black beards. He saw pearl stickpins, silky, satiny clothing. And there, against a fence, Jeb Stuart. Longstreet pulled up. The cavalier, a beautiful man, was lounging against a fence, a white rail fence in a circle of light, a circle of admirers. Reporters were taking notes. Stuart was dressed in soft gray with butternut braid along the arms and around the collar, and lace at his throat. And the feathered hat was swept back to hang happily, boyishly from the back of his head, and curls peeked out across the wide, handsome forehead. Full bearded, to hide a weak chin, but a lovely boy. Carefree, mud-spattered, obviously tired, languid, cheery, confident. He looked up at Longstreet, waved a languid hello. He gave the impression of having been up for days, in the saddle for days, and not minding it. Longstreet jerked a nod, unsmiling. He thought, "We have small use for you now, but you are Lee's problem." Longstreet slowed, not wanting to speak to Stuart. The crowd was beginning to press in around his horse, shouting congratulations. Longstreet looked from face to breathless face, amazed. Congratulations? For what? The crowd had moved in between him and Stuart. He pressed stubbornly forward toward Lee's cottage. It was impossible to answer questions, too much noise. He wished he had not come. "Ride back later when it's quiet." But too late to go now. One of Lee's people, Venable, had taken the reins of his horse. Someone was yelling in an eerie wail, "Way for General Longstreet! Way for the general!" And there across the crowd he saw an open space by the door of the little house, and there in the light was Lee. Quiet spread out from Lee. The old man stepped out into the light, came forward. Stuart swung to look. Longstreet saw men beginning to take off their hats in the old man's presence. Lee came up to Longstreet's horse, put out his hand, said something very soft. Longstreet took the hand. There was no strength in it. Lee was saying that he was glad to see him well, and there was that extraordinary flame in the dark eyes, concern of a loving father that flicked all Longstreet's defenses aside and penetrated to the lonely man within, like a bright hot spear. And Longstreet nodded, grumbled, and got down from the horse. Lee said accusingly that he had heard that Longstreet had been in the front line again, and that he had promised not to do that. And Longstreet, flustered by too many people staring at him, too many strangers, said, "Well, he'd just come by for orders." Lee said watchfully, smiling, "General Stewart is back." The crowd opened for Jeb. He came forward with extended hand. Longstreet took it, mumbled, could not meet the younger eyes. Jeb was grinning a brilliant grin. Hands were patting him on the back. Longstreet felt mulish. "Damn fool." But he said nothing. Lee said that General Stewart ought to know how worried they had all been about him, and Stewart grinned like a proud child. But there was something wary in his eyes, looking at Lee, some small bit of question, and Longstreet wondered what the old man had said. Stewart said something about having seen a lot of Yankee countryside lately, and it was getting kind of dull. And slowly the noise began to grow up around them again. They moved toward the house, Lee taking Longstreet by the arm. They moved in a lane through hundreds of people, like Moses at the parting of the sea. Somebody began a cheer, a formal cheer, a university cheer. A band struck up, "Oh, Lord, Bonnie Blue Flag" again. Hands were touching Longstreet. He went up into the small house and into a small room, the roof closing in over him like the lid on a jar. But even here it was jammed with people, a tiny room no bigger than your kitchen, and all Lee's officers and aides working, rushing in and out. And even here some people from Richmond. A place cleared for Lee, and he sat down in a rocking chair. And Longstreet saw him in the light and saw that he was tired. Lee rested a moment, closing his eyes. There was no place for Longstreet to sit except on the edge of the table, and so he sat there. Taylor pushed by, begging Longstreet's pardon, needing a signature on a letter to someone. Lee raised a hand. "We'll rest for a moment." Longstreet saw the old man sag, breathe deeply, his mouth open. Lines of pain around the eyes. He put the gray head down for a moment, then looked up quickly at Longstreet, shook his head slightly. "A bit tired." He never said anything like that. Lee never complained. Longstreet said, "Can I get you something?" Lee shook his head. Aides were talking loudly about artillery, a message to Richmond. Longstreet thought, "No rest here." Lee said, reading his mind, "I'll clear them out in a minute or two." He took another deep breath, almost a gasp, put a hand to his chest, shook his head with regret. His face was gray and still. He looked up with a vagueness in his eyes. "It was very close this afternoon."
"Sir?"
"They almost broke. I could feel them breaking. I thought for a moment, I saw our flags go up the hill. I almost thought." Longstreet said,
"It wasn't that close."
But Lee's eyes were gazing by him at a vision of victory. Longstreet said nothing. He rubbed his mouth. Lee, eyes strange, so dark and soft. Longstreet could say nothing. In the presence of the commander, the right words would not come. Lee said, "The attacks were not coordinated. I don't know why. We shall see. But we almost did it, this day. I could see an open road to Washington." He closed his eyes, rubbed them. Longstreet felt an extraordinary confusion. He had a moment without confidence, windblown and blasted, vacant as an exploded shell. There was a grandness in Lee that shattered him, silenced him. You could not preach caution here, not to that face. And then the moment passed, and a small rage bloomed, not at Lee, but at Longstreet himself. He started to try to speak, but Lee said, "It was reported that General Barksdale was killed."
"Yes, sir."
"And General Sims?"
"Sir."
"And how is it with General Hood?"
"I think he'll live. I've just come from him."
"Praise God. We could not spare General Hood." He was gazing again into nowhere. After a moment, he said, almost plaintively, "I've lost Dorsey Pender." "Yes," Longstreet said. "One by one, down the dark road. Don't think on that now." Lee said, "He would have made a corps commander, I think." The old man sat, looking half asleep. Longstreet said stiffly,
"Sir, there are three Union corps dug in on the high ground in front of me."
Lee nodded. After a moment he said, "So very close. I believe one more push." A burst of shouting outside. The band had come closer. Longstreet said,
"Today I lost almost half my strength."
And felt like a traitor for saying it. The truth, the granite truth. Felt a smallness, a rage. Lee nodded but did not seem to hear. Longstreet pushed on.
"The way to the right is still open, sir."
Lee looked up slowly, focused, slowly smiled, put out a hand, touched Longstreet's arm. "Let me think, General."
"We have enough artillery for one more good fight. One more."
"I know." Lee took a breath, sat up. "Let me think on it. But, General, I'm very glad to see you well." Taylor pushed in again. Longstreet reached out, gripped the young man in a metal clasp.
"General Lee needs his rest. I want you to keep some of these people away."
Taylor drew back in frosty reproach, as if Longstreet's hand smelled badly of fish. Longstreet felt the coming of a serious rage. But Lee smiled, reached out for the papers in Taylor's hand. "A few more moments, General, then I'll send them off. Now, what have we here?" Longstreet backed off. The white head bent down over the papers. Longstreet stood there. All his life he had taken orders, and he knew the necessity for command. And the old man in front of him was the finest commander he had ever known. Longstreet looked around at the faces. The gentlemen were chatting, telling lively, funny stories. Out in the smoky night, a band was mounting another song.
"Too many people. Too much noise."
He backed out the door.
"Come back later. In the night, later, when the old man is alone. We will have to talk."
He moved out into the crowd, head down, mounted his horse. Someone pulled his arm. He glared. Marshall. Red-faced, waving papers, cheeks hot with rage.
"General Longstreet, sir, will you talk to him?"
"Who? What about?"
"I prepared court-martial papers for General Stuart. General Lee will not sign them."
Longstreet grimaced.
"Of course not. But not my problem."
Marshall held the reins. He was standing close by, and the men nearby were backed off in deference and had not heard him. Longstreet said,
"When did he finally get back?"
"This evening."
Marshall, with effort, was keeping his voice down.
"He was joyriding. For the fun of it. He captured about 100 enemy wagons. And left us blind in enemy country. Criminal. Absolutely criminal. Several of us have agreed to ask for court-martial. But General Lee says he will not discuss it at this time."
Longstreet shrugged.
"General, if there is not some discipline in this army, there are good men dead, sir."
Marshall struggled. Lee saw a man closing in, fat man with a full beard, familiar face, a Richmond reporter.
Yes, a theorist on war,
a man with a silvery vest and many opinions. He came, notebook in hand. Longstreet itched to move, but Marshall held.
I lack your opinion, sir. You are the second-ranking officer in this army. Do you believe that these court-martial papers should be signed?
Longstreet paused. Men were closing in, yelling more congratulations. Longstreet nodded once, deliberately.
I do, he said. Will you talk to General Lee? I will.
Longstreet gathered the reins. Men were close enough now to hear, were staring up at him.
But you know, Marshal, it won't do any good. We can try, sir. Right.
Longstreet touched his cap.
We can at least do that.
He spurred toward the cool dark. They opened to let him pass. Hats were off. They were cheering. He rode head down toward the silent road.
He was amazed at the air of victory. He thought, got so that whenever they fight, they assume there's victory that night.
Face of Gory. They can't blame General Lee, not no more.
But there was no victory today.
So very close, the old man said. And yet it was not a loss. And Longstreet knew that Lee would attack in the morning.
He would never quit the field, not with the Union Army holding the field. 3 Union Corps on the hills above. Lee will attack.
Longstreet stopped, in darkness, looked back toward the light. A voice was calling. Longstreet turned to ride on, and then the voice registered and he looked back. A grinning Fremantle, hat held high like cloth on the arm of a scarecrow, bony, ridiculous. He looked like an illustration Longstreet had once seen of Ichabod Crane.
Good evening, sir. My compliments, sir. Marvelous evening. What? Extraordinary. May I say, sir, that I observed your charge this afternoon, and I was inspired, sir. Inspired. Extraordinary, sir. A general officer at the front of the line. One's heart leaps. One's hat is off to you, sir.
He executed a vast, swirling bow, nearly falling from the horse, arose grinning, mouth a half-moon of cheery teeth. Longstreet smiled.
Will you take my hand, sir, in honor of your great victory?
Longstreet took the limp palm, knowing the effort it cost the Englishman, who thought handshaking unnatural.
Victory,
Longstreet said.
General Lee is the soldier of the age, the soldier of the age. Fremantle radiated approval like a tattered star. But he did it with such cool and delicate grace that there was nothing unnatural about it, nothing fawning or flattering. He babbled a charming hero worship, one gentleman to another.
Longstreet, who had never learned the art of compliment, admired it.
May I ride along with you, sir?
Course.
I do not wish to intrude upon your thoughts and schemes.
No problem.
I observed you with General Lee. I would imagine that there are weighty technical matters that occupy your mind.
Longstreet shrugged. Fremantle rode along, beamily chatting. He remarked that he had watched General Lee during much of the engagement that day, and that the general rarely sent messages. Longstreet explained that Lee usually gave the orders and then let his boys alone to do the job. Fremantle returned to awe.
The soldier of the age, he said again.
And Longstreet thought,
should have spoken to Lee. Must go back tonight. But let the old man sleep. Never saw his face that weary. Soul of the army. He's in command. You are only the hand. Silence. Like a soldier. He will attack. Well, they love him. They do not blame him. They do impossible things for him. They may even take that hill.
Have no doubt, Fremantle was saying, that General Lee shall become the world's foremost authority on military matters when this war is over. Which would appear now to be only a matter of days, or at most a few weeks. I suspect all Europe will be turning to him for lessons.
Lessons?
I have been thinking, I must confess, of setting some brief thoughts to paper, Fremantle announced gravely. Some brief remarks of my own, appended to an account of this battle, and perhaps others this army has fought. Some notes as to the tactics.
Tactics?
General Lee's various stratagems will be most instructive, most illuminating. I wonder, sir, if I might enlist your aid in this, endeavor? As one most closely concerned? That is, to be brief, may I come to you when in need?
Sure, Longstreet said. Tactics? He chuckled. The tactics are simple. Find the enemy, fight him.
He shook his head, snorting. Fremantle spoke softly, in tones of awe.
One would not think of General Lee, now that one has met him, now that one has looked him, so to speak, in the eye, as it were, one would not think him, you know, to be such a devious man.
Devious?
Longstreet swung to stare at him, aghast.
Oh, my word! Fremantle went on devoutly, but he's a tricky one.
The old grey fox, as they say. Charming phrase. American to the hilt. Devious.
Longstreet stopped dead in the road.
Devious.
He laughed aloud. Fremantle stared an owlish stare.
Why, Colonel, bless your soul. There ain't a devious bone in Robert Lee's body. Don't you know that?
My dear sir.
My damn man. If there is one human being in the world less devious than Robert Lee, I ain't yet met him. By God and fire, Colonel, but you amuse me.
And yet Longstreet was not amused. He leaned forward blackly across the pommel of the saddle.
Colonel, let me explain something. The secret of General Lee is that men love him, and follow him with faith in him. That's one secret. The next secret is that General Lee makes a decision and he moves, with guts. And he's been up against a lot of sickly generals who don't know how to make decisions, although some of them have guts, but whose men don't love them. That's why we win, mostly, because we move with speed and faith, and because we usually have the good ground. Tactics? God, man, we don't win because of tricks. What were the tactics at Malvern Hill? What were the tactics at Fredericksburg, where we got down behind a bloody stone wall and shot the bloody hell out of them as they came up, wave after wave? Bravest thing you ever saw, because, listen, there are some damn good boys across the way, make no mistake on that. I fought with those boys. And they know how to fight when they've got the ground. But tactics? Tactics?
He was stumbling for words, but it was pouring out of him in hot clumps out of the back of the brain, the words like falling coals. And Fremantle stared open-mouthed.
God in heaven!
Longstreet said, and repeated it.
There's no strategy to this bloody war. What it is old Napoleon and a hell of a lot of chivalry. That's all it is. What were the tactics at Chancellorsville, where we divided the army, divided it, so help me God, in the face of the enemy, and got away with it because Joe Hooker froze cold in his stomach? What were the tactics yesterday? What were they today? And what will be the blessed tactics tomorrow? I'll tell you the tactics tomorrow. Devious. Christ in heaven. Tomorrow we will attack an enemy that outnumbers us, an enemy that outguns us, an enemy dug in on the high ground, and let me tell you, if we win that one, it will not be because of the tactics, or because we are great strategists, or because there is anything even remotely intelligent about the war at all. It will be a bloody miracle, a bloody miracle.
And then he saw what he was saying. He cut it off. Fremantle's mouth was still open. Longstreet thought,
very bad things to say. Disloyal. Fool. Bloody damned fool.
and then he began truly to understand what he had said. It surfaced, like something long sunken rising up out of black water. It opened up, there in the dark of his mind, and he turned from Fremantle. The Englishman said something. Longstreet nodded. The truth kept coming. Longstreet waited. He had known all this for a long time, but he had never said it, except in fragments. He had banked it and gone on with the job, a soldier all his life. In his mind he could see Lee's beautiful face, and suddenly it was not the same face. Longstreet felt stuffed and thick and very strange. He did not want to think about it. He spurred the horse. Hero reared. Longstreet thought, "You always know the truth. Wait long enough, and the mind will tell you." He rode beneath a low tree. Leaves brushed his hat. He stopped. A voice at his elbow. Fremantle.
"Yes," Longstreet said. "Damn fool things to say. To a guest."
"If I have disturbed you, sir..."
"Not at all. Things on my mind. If you don't mind, Colonel."
Fremantle apologized. Longstreet said good night. He sat alone on his horse in the dark. There was a fire in a field. A boy was playing a harmonica. Frail and lovely sound. Longstreet thought of Barksdale as he had gone to die, streaming off to death. White hair trailing him like white fire. Hood's eyes were accusing. "Should have moved to the right," he thought.
"Tactics are old Napoleon and a lot of chivalry." He shuddered.
He remembered that day in church when he prayed from the soul and listened, and knew in that moment that there was no one there, no one to listen.
"Don't think on these things. Keep an orderly mind. This stuff is like heresy."
It was quieter now, and very warm and wet, a softness in the air, a mountain peace. His mind went silent for a time, and he rode down the long road between the fires in the fields, and men passed him in the night unknowing, and soldiers chased each other across the road. A happy camp, behind the line. There was music and faith and pride.
"We have always had pride."
He thought suddenly of Stonewall Jackson, old Thomas, old Blue Light.
He could move men. "Yes. But you remember, he ordered pikes for his men. Spears, for the love of God. And the pikes sit by the thousands, rusting now in a Richmond warehouse, because Jackson is dead and gone to glory. But he would have used them. Pikes. Against cannon and Black Rose. Against that hill in the morning. They come from another age. The age of Virginia. Must talk to Lee in the morning. He's tired. Never saw him that tired and sick, but he'll listen. They all come from another age. General Lee, I have three Union Corps in front of me. They have the high ground, and they are dug in, and I am down to half my strength." He will smile and pat you on the arm and say, "Go do it." And perhaps we will do it. He was approaching his own camp. He could hear laughter ahead, and there were many bright fires. He slowed, let Hero crop grass. He felt a great sense of shame. A man should not think these things, but he could not control it. He rode into camp, back to work. He came in silently, and sat back under a dark tree, and Sorrel came to him with the figures. The figures were bad. Longstreet sat with his back against a tree, and out in the open there was a party, sounds of joy. George Pickett was telling a story. He was standing by a fire, wild-haired, gorgeous, stabbing with an invisible sword. He could tell a story. A circle of men was watching him. Longstreet could see the grins, flash of a dark bottle going round. Off in the dark there was a voice of a young man singing, clear Irish tenor. Longstreet felt a long way off, a long, long way. Pickett finished with one mighty stab, then put both hands on his knees and crouched and howled with laughter, enjoying himself enormously. Longstreet wanted a drink. No, not now. Later. In a few days. Perhaps a long bottle and a long sleep. He looked across the firelight and saw one face in the ring not smiling, not even listening, one still face staring unseen into the yellow blaze. Dick Garnett. The man Jackson had court-martialed for cowardice. Longstreet saw Low Armstead nudge him, concerned, whisper in his ear. Garnett smiled, shook his head, turned back to the fire. Armstead went on watching him, worried. Longstreet bowed his head. Saw the face of Robert Lee. Incredible eyes. An honest man, a simple man. Out of date. They all ride to glory. All the plumed knights. Saw the eyes of Sam Hood, accusing eyes. He'll not go and die. Did not have the black look they get, the dying ones, around the eyes. But Barksdale is gone, and Sims, and half of Hood's division. Evening, Pete. Longstreet squinted upward. Tall man holding a tall glass. Youthful grin under steel-gray hair. Low Armstead. How goes it, Pete?
Passing well, passing well.
Come and join us, why don't you? We liberated some Pennsylvania whiskey. Ain't much left. Longstreet shook his head. Mind if I set a spell? Armstead squatted, perched on the ground, sitting on his heels, resting the glass on his thigh. What do you hear from Sam Hood?
May lose an arm.
Armstead asked about the rest. Longstreet gave him the list. There was a moment of silence. Armstead took a drink, let the names register. After a moment he said, Dick Garnett is sick. He can't hardly walk.
I'll get somebody to look after him.
Would you do that, Pete? He'll have to take it, coming from you.
Sure.
Thing is, if there's any action, he can't stand to be out of it. But if you ordered him...
Longstreet said nothing.
Don't suppose you could do that? Armstead said wistfully.
Longstreet shook his head.
I keep trying to tell him he don't have to prove a thing. Not to us. Armstead brooded. Well, what the hell... He sipped from the glass. A pleasant brew. The Dutchmen make good whiskey. Oh, beg your pardon. Longstreet looked out into the firelight. He recognized Fremantle, pop-eyed and grinning, rising awkwardly to his feet, tin cup raised for a toast. Longstreet could not hear. Armstead said, I've been talking to that Englishman. He isn't too bright, is he? Longstreet smiled. He thought,
Devious Lee.
Armstead said, We put it to him. How come the Limeys didn't come help us? In their own interest and all. Hell, perfectly obvious they ought to help. You know what he said? He said the problem was slavery. Now, what do you think of that? Longstreet shook his head. That was another thing he did not think about. Armstead said disgustedly, They think we're fighting to keep the slaves. He says that's what most of Europe thinks the war is all about. Now, what are we supposed to do about that? Longstreet said nothing. The war was about slavery, all right. That was not why Longstreet fought, but that was what the war was about, and there was no point in talking about it.
Never had been.
Armstead said, Old Fremantle said one thing that was interesting. He said whole time he's been in this country, he never heard the word slave. He said we always call them servants. Now you know that's true. I never thought of it before, but it's true. Longstreet remembered his speech. In a land where all slaves are servants, all servants are slaves, and thus ends democracy.
A good line. But it didn't pay to think on it.
Armstead was saying, That Fremantle is kind of funny. He said that we Southerners were the most polite people he'd ever met, but then he noticed we all of us carry guns all the time, wherever we went. And he figured that maybe that was why.
He.
Armstead chuckled. But we don't really need the Limeys, do we, Pete? You think? Not so long as we have old Bobby Lee to lead the way. Pickett's party was quieting. The faces were turning to the moon. It was a moment before Longstreet, slightly deaf, realized they had turned to the sound of the tenor singing, an Irish song. He listened. Oh, hast thou forgotten how soon we must sever? Oh, hast thou forgotten how soon we must part? It may be for years, it may be forever.
That boy can sing, Longstreet said. That's Kathleen Mavourneen, am I right?
He turned to Armstead. The handsome face had gone all to softness. Longstreet thought he was crying just for a moment, but there were no tears, only the look of pain. Armstead was gazing toward the sound of the voice, and then his eyes shifted suddenly and he looked straight down. He knelt there unmoving while the whole camp grew slowly still, and in the dark silence, the voice sang the next verse, softer, with great feeling, with great beauty. Very far off to Longstreet's dull ear, far off and strange, from another time, an older, softer time. And Longstreet could see tears on faces around the fire, and men beginning to drop their eyes, and he dropped his own, feeling a sudden spasm of irrational love. Then the voice was done. Armstead looked up. He looked at Longstreet and then quickly away. Out in the glade they were sitting motionless. And then Pickett got up suddenly and stalked, face wet with tears, rubbing his cheeks, grumbling. Then he said stiffly, Good cheer, boys. Good cheer tonight. The faces looked up at him. Pickett moved to the rail fence and sat there and said, Let me tell you the story of old Tangent, which is Dick Ewell's horse, which, as God is my final judge, is not only the slowest and orneriest piece of horseflesh in all this here army, but possibly also the slowest horse in this hemisphere, or even in the history of all slow horses. The faces began to lighten. A bottle began to move. Pickett sat on the rail fence like old Baldy Ewell riding the horse. The laughter began again, and in the background they played something fast and light, and the tenor did not sing. In a few moments Pickett was doing a hornpipe with Fremantle, and the momentary sadness had passed like a small mist. Longstreet wanted to move over there and sit down, but he did not belong there. Armstead said, You hear anything of Win Hancock?
Ran into him today, Longstreet gestured. He's over that way, mile or so.
That a fact, Armstead grinned. Bet he was tough.
He was.
Ha! Armstead chuckled. He's the best they've got, and that's a fact.
Yep.
Like to go on over and see him soon's I can, if it's all right.
Sure. Maybe tomorrow.
Well, that'll be fine. Armstead looked up at the moon. That song there, Kathleen Mavourneen, He shrugged. Longstreet looked at him. He was rubbing his face. Armstead said slowly, "Last time I saw old Wynn, we played that. Round the